We're happy to make podcasts available for selected EdWebinars for your listening pleasure. If you'd like to receive a CE certificate, you must watch the video recording. Recordings and quizzes can be found in the EdWebinar archives. Please visit home.edweb.net/podcasts for more information.
Hello, hello, welcome. Welcome, everyone, to Prompt Engineering for Responsible Digital Citizens. My name is Jennifer Ehall. I'm with Common Sense Education, and we are really excited to have you all join us today. As you're joining us, we always love to see where you're joining us from and maybe a little bit about your role as we navigate our conversation today. So welcome to all of you. I want to introduce my two colleagues and dearest friends. We have a whole Common Sense team with us today. So I think we're going to have a really good time. So we have Sue Thoughts. Hi, Sue.
Hello, hello.
We have Sue joining us from the LA, Los Angeles area, and she's our outreach director at Common Sense Education. So she is very well versed in all things professional learning and has been doing a lot of work with AI and the prompt engineering component. So we are excited to hear from her today. Tali, hello.
Hi.
So nice to see you and your beautiful smile. Tali joins us from New York. She is our East Coast Education Director and also has been working, you know, kind of knee deep in the AI conversations with educators. And so I think they're both going to bring a really nice wealth of knowledge up to us today. So without further ado, let's keep moving through this. We have a quick poll for us today. We're always curious to see how many of you are familiar with Common Sense Education, or, you know, before registering, you know, were you familiar with Common Sense? So for those of you who know Common Sense, hello, and welcome back if you've joined us before in prior webinars. For those of you who are brand new to us, we welcome you. We're glad you're here. I think you're going to love what you see today. So thank you. Thank you. So let's see here. Ooh, this group, wow, I feel like this is a little different from the last few months. Usually we have a more weighted, I'd never heard of Common Sense till I've joined the webinar, you know, registered for the webinar, as opposed to today. I feel like we have lots of friends in our audience. This is good. This is really good. So thank you to everyone who completed the poll for us. Danielle's here. Hello, Danielle. I see lots of friends. How about you and Sue? Sue and Tali, do you see lots of friends in the chat?
I just saw Erica running through there, but I know there's, I cannot keep up with this chat. Always.
It's fast
always
today. it's fast today. Which is good. There's lots of folks in here today. So this is wonderful. Okay. I am going to turn it over to our wonderful Sue and Tali as we begin our conversation today.
Excellent. Thanks so much, Jennifer. And thank you, everyone, for joining us today. I know AI is a big topic for many folks, and we just wanted to begin by talking a little bit about prompt engineering. And before we begin, you know, we just all wanted to get on the same page and talk about what prompt engineering is. And, you know, of course, the first thing that we did, you know, as we're trying to define this, you know, was we asked Bard, now known as Gemini, what prompt engineering is. And if they had to give a definition of what this is what was spit out, right? This was our answer. And defined as the art and science of crafting the perfect input or prompt to get the desired output, right? So I thought that was a pretty succinct way of putting this whole concept of prompt engineering. Using a large language model, also known as an LLM, or other generative AI system. And so the comparison was, it's like giving an artist detailed instructions for a painting or a chef a meticulously chosen recipe to ensure the best possible outcome. And so we thought that it was a good description. We, you know, for ourselves, it's a way that we kind of experiment with some of these generative AI systems in order to be able to get the output that we're looking for, right? Whether we're looking for, you know, all kinds of stuff like lesson plans or ideas or images or all kinds of stuff. So if, by all means, Tali, I guess we'll keep going with that idea, right? What is prompt engineering and how are we going to think about it today? Yeah.
Thanks, Sue. Yeah. And we just wanted to kind of put out there that really this is a tool. It is not magic. As Sue was just talking about, we really have to be thoughtful about our prompts, spend time thinking about what we want. Good input in is typically better input out, as well as the reverse. Bad input in can be poor output. And just a reminder too, just because AI gives us something, if it spits it out, it doesn't mean we have to use it exactly as it is. We always want to have that human touch, constantly reiterating and picking and choosing what we want to use. You know, just kind of rule of thumb with tech, you always need to check it. And the last thing with thinking about it not being magic is that it's not a mind reader. So we really have to give it good, solid information.
Yeah, absolutely. And so today, when we're talking about some of these tools that we're using, we're referencing ChatGPT is one that we will be referencing that, you know, a lot of folks are often familiar with. Or we often use a tool called, it used to be called Bard. Now it is called Gemini. And so you'll see us using Gemini today. Sometimes we've used Magic School AI in the past, but today we'll also be using DFIT. So it's a specific AI, a generative AI tool for teachers in the education world. So just a point of reference, these are the tools that we're going to be discussing today.
And, at Common Sense, as we talk about digital citizenship, we love to have dilemmas always. And so we wanted to start off by giving you all a dilemma. So imagine, and this may have happened, that your fellow teacher has been using generative AI to write report card comments and recommendation letters. This colleague highlighted that it was a huge time saver and recommended it to other staff. What do you think? Please let us know in the chat. Is this a good use of AI?
And we've all got right. Jackie's already weighing in.
All right, you got it. Okay.
Yes. So a lot of folks are saying, yes, yeah. This is a great use, right? So tell us if you could also expand a little bit. I love seeing all this, like, no, yes, right? Like, tell us. I saw an it depends, right?
I saw it depends.
Tell us about
too.
Why. Yeah. Why do you put these responses in there? Tell us what was your reasoning for saying yes or no. So I'm going to try to come over here and see. Oh, I love this. Yes, if used to polish comments that you would make without AI. Thanks, Emily. Nick says it's a good way to start or help, right? Charlotte talks about this 80-20 rule. And I wonder if Charlotte could expand on what that 80-20 rule is, but I bet Tali kind of already knows.
I got really excited by Nicole's where highlighting depends on if they just copied and pasted it or put on their expert lens. And Erica, you are speaking my language, fine, but don't put personally identifying information into the tool. We will be reiterating that many times. Sue, but you highlighted the 80-20, the 80-20 rule. Is that 80%?
Yeah, what do you know about that?
20% AI?
I don't know. I don't know. That's whatever Charlotte thinks it is, right? So at least just some input from each, right? And great use of a tool, Laura says, as long as the educator isn't putting in PII, right? So a lot of folks mentioned some of this. A lot of folks mentioned PII, personally identifiable information. And a lot of folks also mentioned this term personal. So Jennifer mentioned, yes, then add the personal touch. So I think that this is what I hear a lot. I use this case study or something similar to it when I talk to educators about AI. And so sometimes we talk about the personal, like you don't want to just write, you know, impersonal report card comments that just say like, you know, Jimmy's great to have in class, right? We want to make sure that these are meaningful, right? And that they are personal to the student we're describing in the recommendation letter or in the report card comments, but we don't want to give out any identifying information to those students. And we'll touch on that later, right?
Right. We're gonna complicate this a little bit. I just wanted to highlight, which kind of underscores the point you were making too, Sue, that Tammy shared, as long as the comments and the letters are authentic and what you would say about a student in the comments and recommendations. So it's got to be true to what you really feel. And someone else put in, oh, I loved it in all caps. Sarah, always remember, you are the expert, not the generative AI. So thank you. Thank you for that. Let's think a little bit more. I think we already answered this first one for our complicate question. So what student information can or should be input into the generative AI system? Zero. That's right. But this is what we really want to know what you think. Do students or families need to be informed that you've used generative AI? And if you say yes, we would love to know how you inform them, what this looks like. We're going to talk a little bit about this in a minute, but please share in the chat.
Yeah. And one thing I just wanted to mention with that dilemma that we shared just a minute ago is I've asked folks this, you know, I'm going to go back to that dilemma if you don't mind. I've asked folks to physically represent by standing somewhere in a room, whether they think it's a good use or not a good use. And invariably, everybody's spread out across the entire room. If I get 50 people in a room and I post this dilemma, and the thing that I hear is whether you are on this side of the room saying, yes, it's a great use, or no, it's a terrible use, everybody kind of says the same thing. And just as we saw in the chat here, make it personal, keep it human, make sure that you are not sharing identifiable information. But I hear these same comments over and over again about the ways to use it ethically. So today we're going to break down a lot of these concepts and a lot of these ideas about what that all means and how to share that concept with others across your entire school district, right? So I love this idea about informing your students about whether generative AI has been used. And so, what do you, Imani says, always show your sources, right? Be honest, says Louisa. Did anything else strike you?
I think that this is interesting what Robert put in. I wouldn't cite my secretary that took dictation and generated a letter. So why do people think you need to cite or notify when AI is used?
Yeah, and I'm reading Tammy's here. If you're taking the information it provides and using it as content, you should cite it as you always have. If you are using it as a thought partner or to brainstorm, I think you need a general statement that describes how it was used, but not a formal citation. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So what we're trying to do here is go ahead, Tali, you got an idea.
No, you're exactly right. And I just wanted to underscore again, Sarah saying that transparency is important and also sets a good example. And just wanted to share, we're going to share in the chat in a moment, but we partner with a lot of great educators. One of them is a woman named Nicole Carrard out of Maine, who has a blog with Kate called Two Maine Educators. And they talk about how when they use AI as a thought partner, they'll say, going back to Sue, what you said, the 80-20 rule, like 90% human, 10% AI, and talk through it. And it's really about that modeling for colleagues, that modeling for students, that modeling for families, because this is still so new. And number one, it might not be familiar to everyone. And number two, we want to show kind of that transparency piece. So Sue, back to what you were going to say.
I guess I'm just thinking about, you know, if you are in a space in which you can ask these questions, you know, for example, you're in a staff meeting with your staff at your school or in your district, can you pose these questions? And I think everybody will kind of come to an agreement. Like, it may sound like a controversial statement, or it may sound like something that people are all over the place in whether or not they agree or disagree with the statement. But I think you can at least have this conversation and be very transparent about how you feel about the use of AI for applications like this. I think these conversations are so important. Do families need to be informed? How do we make that policy? How do we make that transparent? So having these kinds of conversations in your school is an important place to start.
Absolutely. And as with all of our resources, feel free to share any of the slides that we're sharing today or the dilemmas, bring them back to your teams and just have these conversations like Sue is talking about.
And I just love what Danielle said. The conversation is important, not that we all agree, right?
Yes. Yes.
I think oftentimes you'll find that you do agree on very important, you know, statements. And those are the pieces that I think will come out of these conversations. Whether you all might agree or disagree on that initial prompt, that's probably all over the place. But you probably all believe that your students deserve your best. And how do you get there? That's where we're going.
And I just have to say, I am even appreciating the back and forth in the chat about how we view AI. So thank you. I was just looking at some of Imani's responses. Awesome. Okay, Sue, are you okay if we talk through an example right now?
Yes, let's keep going. I'm having a good time.
Okay, great. So we're going to do a little practice. This is a fictitious student. I need to give a shout out to Laura Agondo from New York City Public Schools, who created this student for an IEP dilemma. And I also want to let you know that not only is this a fictitious student, it's also the image you're seeing was created with Adobe Firefly that's trained with images from Creative Commons, Wikimedia, everything that's in the public domain. So wanted to share that we wanted to use an image like that. Okay, so let me just share some highlights as you're reading kind of as I'm going through it. But we've got Fiona. You'll see we already crossed out her last name. Again, she's fictitious, but as we're practicing, not putting in any PII. She's a 19-year-old student. She's looking to finish her final year of high school. She likes art. She likes participating in the environmental science club. She struggles with reading, having been diagnosed with dyslexia early in her schooling, and her latest reading assessment puts her at about an eighth grade reading level. She has difficulty decoding multisyllabic words and often has trouble connecting the information read in a text to real life scenarios. She does her best reading when presented with text in smaller, manageable chunks, like in a magazine or excerpt. So we, as Fiona's fictitious teachers, we've been tasked with coming up with some IEP goals for her following the SMART goal approach. And we wanted to use generative AI. So we're about to show a video of this process. Anything to add, Sue, before we play the video?
If you're unfamiliar with what an IEP is, I'm sure most of you who are here are educators, but I always try to make sure that we don't include all the jargon, and it's an individualized education plan for students who have specific needs. And so in this case study that we have here, we as Tali and I are her teachers who are tasked with the process of creating an individualized education plan for our student Fiona. And so we're just going to show you a little bit about how we used, you know, this to make a prompt. All right, here we go.
Hi, Sue. What are we doing right now?
So I took your prompt from about Fiona and about how we need to make an IEP that is a SMART goal. And I put it into Bard, but I kept it real simple, right? I just wanted to put in some basic information and said, create an IEP for the following student and make it a SMART goal. Fiona is a 19-year-old female who struggles with reading and dyslexia. Her latest reading assessment put her at an eighth grade level, right? To see what Bard would give back to me.
Right.
The first thing it said to me was, sorry, I don't have enough info. Right. So, but it did give me a little bit of SMART goal outline, maybe, so that I could try to think about some ideas for this. And it kind of gave me just some like ways to get started, perhaps, if I wanted to do this. So would this be useful to you?
Yeah. And I have to say, I respect that it acknowledged that there wasn't enough information. I am curious, Sue, if you put that same limited information into a different generative AI tool, say ChatGPT,
would it? Funny you should ask. Funny you should ask. Yeah, because here we go. If I put that same thing into ChatGPT, what I got back, and this is what I got back today. If I do it again, it's probably going to be something very different, right? But what I got back was no indication that it's limited. It's just like, sure, I can make an IEP for you. Right. So it gives me some information and it gives me an annual goal, a SMART goal, and it created everything for me, right? With all these objectives. What do you think?
I'm reading it as you're showing it. It feels to me, it feels very impersonal.
Like what?
And kind of vague.
Accommodations, for example.
Yeah. Dyslexia-friendly fonts. Okay. What does that mean? Can you tell me a little bit more about a quiet and well-lit reading environment? What does that look like in our school or in our classroom? What are some of those multiple formats? It says visual aids and verbal explanations.
Is this not enough for you to be able to go
on? To me, this isn't enough as a former special ed teacher. And I can also say as a parent, I would say, what does this actually mean?
All right. So it gives some kind of generic suggestions, some objectives that relate to getting her to a 10th grade reading level, but maybe not a whole lot more, right?
Yeah. And I think it definitely needs like the personalization and individualizing.
Okay. So what I have, oops, hold on. Let me try one more time. So what I have here is I also tried to, add more of that info from Fiona, from her profile. So I said, write an IEP goal. So I started over again at Bard, And I said, make it, you know, about Fiona. And I gave her all the information we had, right? About, you know, she's at eighth grade reading level, but, you know, here's her difficulty decoding multisyllabic words and how she does well with smaller, manageable chunks. By giving it more info, I got back a little more info, right? Mm-hmm. So it gave me specific, you know, goals that I need to have, such as multisensory strategies, you know, using the Orton-Gillingham or multisensory program, you know, providing graphic organizers, audiobooks, text annotations. Like, see, these are just more.
Yeah, I like more of that specificity.
All right. And but it just gives me a little bit more ideas, right, to start out with. And, you know, it also includes like how to make her real world connections more feasible, right? Through personalized strategies, right? So, you know, again, it's a little bit vague here. Addressing Fiona's specific learning needs through personalized strategies is crucial for success. Of course, we know that that's kind of generic, but overall, there might be some information in here that I could use to, you know, I could erase some of it. Like, we don't have an individualized tutoring specialist, reading specialist, or we don't have a dyslexia support group at my school.
It might be something you decide you want to start. This is absolutely giving you an idea.
And the other thing I kind of liked was at the end, it says, here's a disclaimer, right? This sample IEP may need to be modified, right, to meet the requirements of your school. So it's a reminder that this is not the be all end all.
I think both of them do a good job of giving you the structure and mm-hmm. an outline. And this one really gives a lot more of those details so that you can edit and work off of it with just more information.
At least it gives you a good starting point, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Thanks, Sue.
Got very meta in there. So the reason that we recorded this was because it was hard for us to be able to show all of this, you know, in a different screen because of the limitations of our platform today. So we wanted to make sure that we could show you what, in case you have never used a generative AI tool and put in a prompt, you know, such as one that you might use for an IEP, we just wanted to show you what that would look like both in Bard and in ChatGPT. And you could see kind of the limitations. You could see what an actual output looked like in case you were, you know, unfamiliar with these tools. So was there something that came out of this, Tali, that that we did not talk about in there?
I just think in the chat, there's been great suggestions about how you might even use this just to come up with the types of questions that maybe family members would ask you or the things you should think about. And my big takeaway was really that it was helpful for the structure piece. But again, you've got to know your student and be able to put in that information.
Yeah. And so the questions are about, you know, how much information is okay? Is it even okay to put in a first name in there, right? Perhaps you use a fake first name for every single IEP that you might be generating, right? So this is one of our points here today is to consider the privacy of your students first and foremost before you're using any of these tools. So what does that all mean, Tali?
Well, I was going to say, even with that first point there, the avoid all personally identifiable information, you know, we took out Fiona's last name, but I've presented at different districts where they say, you can't even put in that level of detail about what she's dealing with. So you really need to check with your district or your school on their policies. Sue, I love that idea of just a generic name as a side note, and maybe thinking about what are some of those more generalizable characteristics. So that's one piece. That checking for cutting and pasting, I feel like somebody wrote that in the chat too. Some of you might be saying like, oh, duh, of course, but I'm just going to point to any government document on page 1000 where they haven't like redacted somebody's name. Like, it's just, you know, we're human. It's easy to not always or to accidentally forget to do that cutting and pasting. So I'm just going to say for both of those, you know, when in doubt, that's our hot tip. When in doubt, leave it out. And then the practice, like practice doing this with colleagues, practice with fictitious students, just practicing and using it, talking to colleagues. Sue, anything right. to add and here?
Just, you know, just being very mindful that it's not just about your students, you know, and your own privacy that you always need to be mindful of, but of course your students, of course your colleagues, right? This is just good general practice for anything that you're putting out online. All of these principles don't just apply to generative AI and the world that, you know, that we're talking about today. They apply across, you know, all tools that we're using, is just to be mindful of everybody's, you know, personally identifiable information. And so when it, oh, go ahead.
I was just going to say, I so appreciate that you brought that up, Sue, because how do we impart this to our students?
Well, I just brought this in because a lot of times we say, don't put in private information, don't put in private, but not all people understand what is private. And so I brought in this lesson so that you might even be able to think about this with your younger students, right? And helping them understand what is private information, right? And how do we distinguish it from just information that we put out about ourselves online? And so I just wanted to reference this quick lesson from the Common Sense Digital Citizenship curriculum that talks about private and personal information. And the distinguishing quality that we have here is private information is information that can be used to identify you because it's unique to you as an individual. So your full name, your address, your social security number, right? Like anything that can be traced back to you as an individual, as opposed to personal information, which is information that's about you, but it may not be traced back to you. So for example, you know, I like pizza. Tali, you like pizza? If I
am I human?
All right. So we're trying to teach kids that like the information that can be used to come back to you that isn't true for multiple people is what we call private information that should not be shared. Right. And so, you know, in this particular lesson, we ask our students to practice. What does that look like? And we give them examples of things like, you know, is this personal or is this private? Home address, email address, date of birth, right? So these are all questions that we ask our students and we kind of teach them about the distinguishing differences between these two things. Yeah. Anything else? Yeah. Sound good? All right. Keep going.
Great. So we're going to shift gears a little bit and think about misinformation, which we know is another issue we have to think about when using generative AI tools. So here are some things that you can do when you are creating prompts is include reputable sources that you want the AI to use. So the example we gave here is, let's say you are writing a paper or you're thinking about the developmental milestones of kids. So you say, you know, list for me the 5 developmental milestones kids should meet by the age of 6 and use yardsticks by this author. Again, that's something where we can easily go back and verify it once we get that information. You can also ask for citations, and then you do have to go and check them. The example we gave here, I'm a former elementary school teacher. We spent a lot of time talking about animals, a lot of time talking about therapy dogs. So I asked for some resources around teaching about therapy dogs. And so again, you can see very small. There's a lot of different sources there, and we could click on any of them and make sure those add up. And then really the bottom line is people feel differently about this. I tend to not go to AI for something that I know nothing about unless I have numerous ways of verifying it. Because I know that the AI can hallucinate. There's a lot of biases or inaccuracies, and it needs to be checked by humans. So someone put it in the chat. They said, you are the authority, not the AI, but use it as an assistant or a thought partner and get those reputable sources in your prompts. Sue, anything to add here?
I was just thinking, the reason that I put in that first point there about, you know, I was trying to think about, you know, developmental milestones. And I was trying to advise somebody about what kind of developmental milestones there should be by the age of 6. And I remembered this book that I had on my shelf. I don't want to go back and necessarily, I don't have access to that book, right? I may not want to read that, but I remember that being, you know, the one that we used in my class. And so therefore I use that as my center of authority as opposed to the entire web. Right. So I used a citation that I thought was something more authoritative that I could verify. So that was what I used when I made the prompt was I asked a specific resource as opposed to asking the entire internet. And to me, that was what I was looking for. And so I was able to use the ChatGPT tool as an assistant, in identifying the summary of those developmental milestones. So I like this idea of being able to say, okay, where is this information coming from? And how can I look that up and be able to make that citation and have the language model be able to find that for me, right? As opposed to using the entire internet.
Yeah, it makes me think a little bit about, you know, being an Olympic-sized pool and you just say swim across with your eyes closed. And it's a lot easier if you have like a lane or a narrower area. You're not going to be, you know, moving this way or that way and squiggling around. I don't know if that's swimming analogy, but I like the idea of like you're filtering it or you're narrowing it. So to your point, it's not kind of on everything.
Right. So, you know, one of the things, so well, folks are giving a lot of great ideas, certainly in the chat and, you know, about places that you can get verifiable information and, you know, just ways in which you can avoid some of these hallucinations and some of the ways that you're able to think about getting better information than just asking the entire internet, right? So one of the ways that we wanted to share was National History Day came out with this AI guidance summary here. And I thought this was good guidance around ways in which you may use AI. This is guidance for students. But I thought it also applied here in this educator perspective, where we're looking at, you know, ways to use it for brainstorming topics, right? Or brainstorming words to research a topic, looking for resources you can find in a school or local library, right? By being able to generate that citation list, reviewing your mistakes, your writing, and simplifying the language of a source and to make it more understandable. Another great way for our special ed folks and language learners to be able to use all this AI. And so, you know, named there were ways that you may not use AI for students. So what do you think of that list?
I like it. And I'm ready to do another scenario. What do you think, Sue?
All right, here we go. So let's see what we're talking about here.
So we're going to think about how we're applying these ideas. So imagine, I'm like, this is so hypothetical that happens every day. Your school is short-staffed and you're asked to cover a lesson. Here's your assignment. You're going to use a generative AI tool to help you prepare for this topic. And here was our prompt, okay? Create a 45-minute introductory lesson for eighth grade about the Harlem Renaissance. So what should a substitute teacher, what should a quick fill-in teacher consider when looking at an AI-generated lesson?
All right. Do we want to go straight to the video?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. We're going to do another video and video.
So think to yourself, how do I not get a bunch of garbage back to me?
Yes.
Right? How do I know that I'm going to get something
taking
useful?
Into account everything we kind of thought about. Yes.
Right.
Hi. We wanted to show you how we used a different generative AI tool for this last scenario, thinking about how to get a subplan together, and wanted to show you. We went to the site called Diffit. It's right now in beta mode. And this was the prompt: create a 45-minute introductory lesson for eighth graders about the Harlem Renaissance. And the reason I wanted to use this tool is because they share all of their sources. So it gives some background for a reading passage. And then there's all the sources here that I can look at. I see PBS NewsHour. I'm familiar with that source and trust it. I see Teachers Institute. I see PBS Learning. I see the 1619 Education Project. And I can click on any of these and see where they're pulling from. So for the PBS one, it gives me a direct link to a lesson I could also use, estimated time to 45 or 60 minute class periods and the grade level. The other thing I wanted to show you with this tool, again, as we're thinking about our different prompts and resources out there, is there's also vocabulary words, and then they have some assessment options. So I really like their open-ended prompts here. I thought that this helped kind of with my cognitive load. If I was coming up with a lesson on the spot and needed to think of some questions or prompts, and I thought this was really helpful.
So I was reading some of these pieces in the chat that I think are just fantastic. And of course, we have lots of great ideas in here, including make your students, instead of teaching the lesson, make them find their own resources. So Laura says here, the biggest thing to consider is the feasibility of the lesson. Notice that some of these lessons don't seem to be written by an educator. So there's often components that aren't needed or missing. I think for an educator to use, they'd really have to have a solid understanding of the content and the learning objectives. Of course. I think, you know, as a last minute, can you please cover my class? Like, you know, if you're just thrown something really quick, you know, maybe you don't always have time to do this. There's not a lot of engagement in this lesson plan right here. What perspectives are missing? right? How do we know that this lesson plan fully outlines the perspectives that need to be represented in this lesson plan? And so, you know, there's a lot of questions that we have here and looking into, you know, what should the lesson objectives be? How do we align it with the curriculum and all that? Anything else to add, Tali?
I think those are all really great points. I think, like at the end where I'm highlighting the longer questions, like to me, that was probably the most helpful of like, oh, I'm walking into this lesson right now. I want to just think of some questions that I can ask the kids. Like, this is something that ideally I know about. I'm not about to teach something I know nothing about, but maybe I need some help thinking about thoughtful questions. So for me, that part was helpful. So I think it's really that like picking and choosing what you need in that moment and how it's going to work for you.
Yeah. And I'm just reading some of these comments. And of course, they're like, you know, Laura's like, why teach the lesson if you don't know what you're talking about? And I'm like, yep, okay. But I know that happens to us all the time. And you are giving a prime example of, you know, of what we're talking about here. Again, remember, it's just a tool. It is a conversation with the generative prompt and, you know, being able to refine more of what it is that you're looking for as part of this, of course, right? But when it comes to information that we are less familiar with, things can be misinterpreted. For example, you know, this also goes for images. This goes for information that I am, you know, less experienced in. And, you know, for misinformation, I was in Canva and I was searching for images. I was generating an image and what I wanted was an Okinawan taiko player. Right? Because I wanted something that represented, my mother is from Okinawa. I play taiko. There's a certain kind of taiko in Okinawa. And this is the image that came back to me. Now, for those of you who are unfamiliar with Okinawan taiko, you might be looking at this and saying, okay, I see an extra arm in there, but like, sure, this probably is accurate, right? But you know, when I see it, I'm looking at these drums and I'm saying, these are totally wrong. These outfits are totally wrong, right? What this, you know, what it should look like is something, you know, more along the lines of this stuff. Thank you, Leslie, for verifying. It should look more like this, right? There are these costumes are specific and the drums are specific and the way that they carry them is specific. So when you're searching for information that you're less familiar with, it's so easy to just kind of use what is given to you and lend the authority over to the AI that generates something back to you. And I am just cautioning big time against that, right? If you, when you are searching for this information, you know, it's very hard to know, you know, when you're being misled and when you're not, right? So, So that's just one of the points that I just wanted to make, is it's easy to hallucinate and give you, especially, you know, with things that are not necessarily represented in the dominant mainstream. It can be very difficult to find good images and content. So Tali, what's this, what do we got here on this slide?
So we have an AI literacy lesson collection. We have a number of different lessons. This is really great for introducing students to a lot of these concepts, whether we're talking about generative AI, misinformation, about bias. So that's what we've highlighted in front of you is we have two lessons in particular. I'm also going to say this whole lesson collection is great to share with colleagues. I know a lot of schools and districts right now are focused on really building up educators' understanding of generative AI and kind of what are the key components. And so please use these lessons with adults as well.
I would begin with adults. Yeah. In fact, that's what I've been doing a lot of, right? Is getting people comfortable with the concept. The top lesson there is, what is AI, right? How is AI trained? How is this built? You know, understanding AI bias and how it happens and the impact on our lives, right? So before we even are able to use these with our students, how do we get our teachers to understand all of these concepts and begin there? So right. That's just something that we just wanted to share, you know, as a part of all of this content.
And one last note, while these lessons are created for middle school and high school and adults, like we said, they can be adapted pretty easily to upper elementary school too.
Yeah. Some of these are, yeah. Some of them are, I think, are very appropriate for some of our younger students. And I'm so glad to see that folks are using these. So thanks so much for using this content. And one other thing that we wanted to share was this idea. This is what, when we first started rolling out a lot of these these ideas around use of AI in the classroom. Creators' rights and plagiarism was, of course, the thing that we heard most about. And we just wanted you to consider the other side, not just the plagiarism part, but just the whole concept of creators' rights. And as you're using some of these tools, make sure that you're avoiding sharing a lot of this intellectual property, right? Tali, what else do we say?
I thought this was really interesting, just thinking about this whole idea of going into a tool and saying like, hey, create a portrait in the style of this artist. So in front of you is an example of Carla Ortiz, who's an artist. Our colleague went and heard her speak. And she was like, yeah, that hurts me when I have generative AI tools creating artwork like mine, that doesn't do anything for me. And it just was a new perspective. Like, even if we're giving credit and acknowledging, like that could potentially be harmful.
Yeah. 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 So, and then the other piece that we wanted to make sure that we also shared was, you know, of course, the idea of citing your sources. So if you have information, you know, that you're using that comes from some of these places, like make sure that you are citing your sources, and you can certainly cite any of these generative AI tools whenever you're, you know, as we did in the beginning with our definition that we use for prompt engineering, right? We use the MLA style of citing our source and the information that it came from. So yes, there is an MLA standard. MLA handbook, whatever, like that's what came up when we were searching this. And I was talking to a bunch of librarians last week, school librarians, and they were talking about the citation of using these generative AI tools as citing them. Of course, you'd like to be able to go back to the original, but that large language model, if you're using that, please make sure that you're also doing using some of those sources. And I wanted to give a shout out, of course, to Matt Miller and some of the work that he's doing specifically on this idea of students using AI in the classroom and what level of AI use is cheating. And what level is more human work? And where do we draw the line as educators, right? Thanks, Kristen, for putting Matt's book in the chat. Mm-hmm. About, you know, where do we find it acceptable in the classroom to think about it? If you can't read some of these, maybe they're kind of small, but like, you know, when the AI does all of the work, you know, as opposed to the student doing all of the work, and where does this blend lie in your classroom as opposed to what's acceptable for student work? And so I really like this perspective on having this conversation in your classroom about what, you know, what is okay for you, what is okay for your students, and how do you navigate that? So I really liked, you know, his perspective on all of that. So yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, so helpful. And I was going to say, as we're talking about having these types of discussions, we also wanted to leave you with ideas of all the different types of dilemmas you could raise with your students or raise with your colleagues. I think it was Danielle earlier in the chat who said, hey, it's just about having these conversations. So, you know, the public discourse right now is full of these different dilemmas. For example, is it ethical for companies like OpenAI to use the content from the New York Times and other publications to train their LLMs, right? How do you think about the role of bias in the content that you're getting from different generative AI tools? Can you even use a generative AI tool to make a birthday card, write a birthday message, create a poem for a family member or a friend? Yeah.
These are rich conversations that you can have with your colleagues. You can use, you know, some of these ideas with your students. And these are important conversations to have so that you all can have a better understanding of where these, you know, these AI tools fit in your life, what is acceptable to you, your district, your classroom, your colleagues, and how do you get students to be thoughtful and mindful about their use of AI every day, whether or not they know it, it is saturating their lives. And how do you make sure that they're being mindful and ethical when it comes to their use of technology in general? And so we encourage all of you to start with some of those AI lessons and really bring it back to digital citizenship skills. This is at the heart of what we do, when it comes to understanding AI and exploring the impact on our values and on society and our well-being. It really comes down to these five core dispositions that we use with all technology when it comes to digital citizenship. So, you know, with digital citizenship, we encourage everybody to slow down, right, and self-reflect on and determine how this is making us feel. How do we find valuable information? How do we seek facts and evidence? How do we consider the perspectives of others who may not be represented in our space right now, right? How do we make sure that we are considering those perspectives, envisioning what our options might be, and then how do we take action when it's time to take action? So absolutely, there are ways in which we can help our students be considerate, be thoughtful, and be ethical when it comes to the use of AI.
And I think even part of that with these core dispositions, if you are using these tools in the classroom in front of your students, modeling it, showing them how you're slowing down to think about that prompt and how you're bringing in, sources that you trust and looking at different perspectives and all of that, because we have to have those constant conversations and modeling for students. I think about it almost like muscle memory, right? We're just training them so that when they're doing this stuff on their own, they're like, oh yeah, this is kind of the process I'm supposed to walk through or consider.
Yeah. So we hope that you will at least consider having these conversations with your students and begin this exploration, not with them just doing it on their own, but with you as their mentor and guide. Welcome back, Jennifer.
Hello. I was busy over there in the community chat. Oh my goodness. So much good stuff. I would highly encourage that when you go into the community to make sure to grab that chat log, because we shared the chat log as well with the deck, presentation deck. And so I think there's just a lot of things that were shared in terms of a resource and just the conversation. So thank you for such a vibrant sharing of how we're all feeling about something that's so new. Sue and Tali, like while listening, I think you nailed it in terms of whether you're just beginning with this or whether you've been kind of had your feet in it for a while. I feel like I either learned something new or I sort of had like that reassurance, like, okay, what I've been doing is the way I should be thinking about this and going about it. And so I do think that I feel everyone should have been able to take at least something away from this. So thank you so much for that. Really appreciate it in such a time of confusion, right?
Yeah.
So this was good. Like we say, it's moving fast, right? And so if you did like this conversation and the content and, the way it's framed, please join us at our newsletter. Get this information into your inbox every Tuesday. Anything else, Sue, Tali? Thank you so much again for taking the time out of your day to share your knowledge and experience with the educators that you're working with. So any final thoughts?
The conversation has been so rich. I am a terrible multitasker, but I've been trying to follow that chat and it's really good. I learned a lot from everyone. Sue, I always learn a lot from you.
Yeah, I'm just fascinated. I mean, all we do a lot of times is just facilitate, right? We go in, we put up a question, we put up some considerations. And today I'm really grateful to everybody who shared and contributed. We don't pretend to be the be all end all authority on everything related to, any of this. We just want everybody to be mindful and having these conversations and consider some of these guidelines so that you then can experiment and do some of these same things with, for yourself, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, thank you again. We'll see you all next month for another great session with a digital citizenship topic in mind. Have a great week, everybody.
Thanks all.
We hope you enjoyed this EdWeb podcast. If you'd like to receive a CE certificate, you must watch the video recording. Recordings and quizzes can be found in the EdWebinar archives. Please visit home.edweb.net/podcasts for more information.